Hi, I'm Fuller, sort of heading up this panel. This is about BBSing, a time before the internet that a lot of people don't remember, and they thought, wow, you actually have to dial somebody else's computer. You can't just find everything immediately. It was going around, I guess the first one started in the really late 70s, early 80s, about for personal users. People used to make them on mainframes for other universities to dial into. That sort of how the internet started in a way is it's the same principle as a BBS, is where you dial in to access. With a BBS, you have mainly three main things on it. You can write email to people, download files, or play games, and that was about what you were limited to. Very basic text-based graphics, or if you were lucky, ANSI-based if you had a good enough connection speed.
RIP.
Well, yeah, RIP and other proprietary protocols were allowed graphical interface. I think 90% of BBS is still run in DOS if you find them, even though one I'm going to set up here is a DOS-based, but you can do programs which will, you can telnet into it from anywhere in the world, and it'll be as if you were dialing up to it. And so I guess other people, if you want to say what all you're doing here. And
we should introduce ourselves.
You're next. Go ahead, introduce yourself, at least. Are you on this panel, or are you just sitting up here?
Well, I was looking at your schedule, and I got
get out of here if you're not on the panel. Go.
Yeah. All right.
Well, I'm kind of lazy that way.
I'm Johnny X, and I've been using BBSs for quite some time. I got my first computer in 1983, and it was called a Franklin Ace 1000, which some of you may recognize as a bootleg Apple II, which kind of set, I guess, the tone for the rest of my computer career. And how old was I then? I was like 14 years old at the time, and then I saw War Games, and I probably mowed about 1,000 miles worth of lawn that summer to be able to buy my 300 baud modem, and it kicked ass. It was great. Haven't looked back since, and I'll talk about all sorts of fun tips and tricks and things you could do with the modem to get around paying long distance and actually sneak on the internet if you knew where to get access at the time, and fun stuff like that. But I'll let the next person introduce himself now.
I am Nimrod. I don't have much experience with BBSs, but probably more than most teenagers my age. Obviously, when the first BBS was around, I wasn't around, so I can't know a whole lot about them. But
making me feel old.
I do have some experience with them, and actually considering trying to set up my own, being a sysop.
And Next.
Dude. Bad form to play on a computer when you're actually supposed to be running a panel.
This is a wonderful file I found, actually. This is why I pulled it up. Top 100 things you can do with your old 300 baud modems, including dropping them off the Empire State Building and then dropping a coin off and seeing which makes a bigger dent and stuff like that. Wonderful stuff you can do with old hardware.
No. You never get rid of old technology. Yeah. I mean, as long as it works, you can find a use for it. It's not obsolete until it won't do what you want it to.
Yeah. Oh, more fun. Yeah. I kind of got online, like they were saying, a long time ago, but I got online about 7 years ago, back in 93. In sixth grade, I did it. It took a long time. Spent a summer collecting pennies, buying a 28.8 modem for $119. Now you can buy 56K modems for like $20, except they suck, because they're WIN modems.
So, or you can have people just give them to you when they switch over to DSL
or
like,
yes,
take this thing, please.
Yeah. Quick poll. Who here has ever been on a BBS before? I'm just curious.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay, cool. Yeah, everybody, basically. Was anybody here on a BBS before 1990? Okay. Well, that counts a lot of people then.
Keep going back.
85. Whoa.
Keep going back year by year.
84, 83, 82, 81.
All right,
80.
There we go.
70. Okay, I was just curious about that. How many of you have been on a BBS in the past year?
Ooh.
Dial-up or Telnet.
Right, Telnet, yeah.
How many people have been on in the past 6 months?
No one.
Okay, that shot that idea. Well, I'll give everybody experience here today.
How Those many people- bastards, they killed BBSs.
How many people here are sysops, not just users?
We're
sysops or are sysops? Okay. Well, I'm going to set up here in just a minute a DOS-based BBS called Virtual Advanced BBS. I have the registration code. It's pirated, sort of, because the the author of the software, nobody's been able to contact him since September of 98. So everybody's just been distributing the code all over because nobody uses it much. Well, yeah, it's actually wonderful BBS because if you bought the registration, you had the full source code for everything. It was restricted to 8 lines, but you could do. It had its own built-in scripting program that you could do any program you want with it, which was really cool. You could redesign the whole interface shell so it would do completely different stuff than what it's designed for.
Yeah, that reminds me. Those of you who like scavenging and pack ratting, looking around for old weird stuff. Check around online, do web searches, try not just eBay, but like PriceWatch and other places. You can find some of these old professional BBS packages that used to cost thousands and thousands of dollars in like $5 bargain bins. Literally, I got a copy of Wildcat 5 with a 25 user license and 100 user license pack for $3 a couple months back. Yeah, and it's fun stuff to play around with. You can pull out those old 386s and 486s you got in your closet and set up your own little BBS network and really waste a lot of time and get all nostalgic and everything. It's cool.
Yeah. I'm just curious also about just general software you guys used. Who here used Wildcat for their software for BBSing? Renegade. Anybody use Renegade? Probably not. What else is there? Well, who here ran a network netmail thing like Fidonet, Echomail, or any other thing? Okay. Yeah, that can be included, yes.
Wrote mine for the Model 100.
Cool. I actually have a trash heady sitting in my room somewhere.
Yeah, so how many people here use software written by other people in this room? Well.
Yeah. Okay. I guess I can go ahead and try setting this up. I kind of unzipped it already.
Whoever used their modems to play musical tunes. Yeah.
You can play Mary Had a Little Lamb. Write that down.
Yeah. Did you ever get into the contest to see who was more elite and who could recognize actual connection speeds just by listening to the modem? Never could do that myself. Are we online yet?
Loser.
Give me just a second here.
I can't recognize.
At least I'm not drunk.
Right. Oh, yeah. Just so everybody knows, this is the guy with the mic, so if you want to ask questions.
Oh, yeah. If at any time you have
questions, try to wait for him.
Anybody have questions while we're at this, while I'm working on this?
Yes, workers? Questions are good. This gives him time to stall while the rest of us stare at him.
Quick announcement on the rules.
Why is it working?
Questions and answers forum. One, please raise your hand, let one of the panelists recognize you, make it more orderly. And two, please let me get the microphone to you because we are recording this for posterity. It won't make any sense if the website only has one side of the conversation.
If I may ego trip about my Model 100, when I moved to Florida, I told the company I was first promised my own PC to have at home. And swore I'd put a BBS on it. They never came up with it, so I wrote my own for the Model 100 since it's what I had. People around town would log into it because Ad 300 bought, they were being kicked off the other bulletin boards in town. And I'd let them play around. The way I had it, I could see each of their commands whenever they typed it. So if they were doing something really stupid, I had a chat mode in it. It would run out and run the little chat program. I could chat with them, explain, no, no, you're doing this. That's foolish. Try this instead, and I'll let you go log back into the board. And people liked it because I let them learn. And a lot of sysops were just, well, I have a line. When people ask me about these mean, nasty hackers, I tell them, listen, the playground bullies have come indoors and learned how to type.
Yeah, it's kind of like IRC nowadays, you know, all the power-tripping sysops of the teenage sysops of the 80s are now the power-tripping IRC channel ops of the 90s. And the, I guess we're in the 2000s now, aren't we? What year is this? Yeah. So, yeah, time is relative. I had something I was going to say, but I forgot what it was. So are you ready yet?
I'm just going to quick reboot.
Oh, okay.
I got a question. Did anyone here ever get into the BBS online game wars where there was
trade wars?
What's that
trade wars?
And there was a few other ones.
Nord.
Yeah, Lord Lodge.
Solar
Wars 2002.
Solar Realms down in Texas. They used to run a big one, and I can't remember the name of it anymore. But there was a way that you could. It wasn't cheating, but there was a system to the game, and you could destroy everybody else, and it only took, you know, a week, and then they have to reset the game.
That was a highlight.
Not to knock the guys who are putting out, you know, all the really cool high-end games nowadays, but, yeah first-person shooters get kind of old after a while. And, and I actually prefer a lot of the older text mode games or some of the real early, like, CGA mode games, Neuromancer being one of my favorites. I've been playing that for weeks now. Still haven't solved it. So.
Yeah. BBS games are way underrated.
Yep. Yep.
NetModem. This here is a wonderful program I have. It's called NetModem. I was introduced to it by a friend
into
online.
Mike, pick up Mike. You can
here.
Move it close to mouth.
Is better?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. What this does is this is a Telnet program. I'm going to take that. Let's see. Anybody now who dials in to the internet and can launch up a Telnet connection to whatever IP address the system is can, well, then once you turn on the BBS software, be able to connect as if you were dialing in. And so all it takes is you to download a program called NetModem. There's also a program out called COMIP. Both of those are
good. Is that one or two M's?
Huh?
One or two M's?
COM/IP. And, what that, both of them just, they're different in licensing, but they both just allow a set number of dial-ins, telnet connections, and then put it out on a fossil port. If anybody doesn't know what a fossil port is, it's just basically a program that goes between the software and your hardware of the actual modem. It just does data storage, compression, error checking, that stuff, independent of the hardware. It makes it more stable in ways for Windows-type stuff, because that way you don't have to worry about Windows as much on it and screwing up all your stuff. But that's what NetModem does, and I'll go back here into DOS really quickly and tell it, use that system then.
Anyone up here ever mess around with packet radio? And some of the old packet BBS is still, yeah. Why don't you tell us about your experiences while we're waiting on the computer over here? Explain
as
a
ham
bit.
Radio operator, let me first explain the packet. Should I?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Come on up.
Hi, I'm the Cheshire Catalyst, and every couple of years I stick my head up and work with 2600 on a magazine on various things. Okay. If the internet is the information superhighway, then packet radio is the information super bicycle path. It is data transmission over ham radio. Ham radio. And let's see. Let's go 144.390. And in a few minutes, we'll probably hear some data go by, because we're in the midst of a very large city where such things happen. There are packet bulletin board systems still operating to this day. major blocks of information pass over the nation's airwaves, over the world's airwaves. Some of it is even significant. For example, Keplerian elements, the mathematical variables used by satellite tracking programs that you feed into your computer along with your latitude and longitude so that you can tell when satellites pass over, you can point your antennas and pick up and maybe even talk to them or through them to other ham operators. For example, R0MIR is the ham radio station on board the Mir space station. Hey, ham radio is one of the hobbies you can take up with you. And there are a number of amateur-built satellites that have gone up as secondary payloads and just kicked out the door while the other payload was going up. More than 30 have been sent up, and about half of them are still operational to this day. You can play with space satellites from the comfort of your own home.
Woohoo!
We'll let you. I also have been known to work with AMSAT, the Amateur Radio Satellite Organization. That's www.amsat.org. Feel free to download any of the information because amateur radio is available to anyone. Contact the American Radio Relay League, ARRL.org, for information on a radio club near you. They'll be happy to help you get your ham radio license. Books at Radio Shack, your local ham club can give you the exam. You can be on the air inside of a month or so. If you don't learn Morse code, you can only play from 50 megahertz up, where all the satellites are. They won't let you play on the HF bands to learn on Morse code at 5 words a minute. So?
That's not illegal, is it, to play with satellites?
Not the amateur satellites. Now, you go play with somebody's TV satellite, and yeah, somebody's going to get pissed.
No Captain problem. Midnight lives.
Yeah, right? I met him at a ham fest once.
Oh, really?
Yes. But there are satellites you can play with. We'll teach you how to play with them. We'll show you how. You can talk with other people via satellites. The one thing that I really like about packet radio is that when I go out exploring the packet radio network, when I do things with that network God had not intended and then show other people how to do it, people thank me for it. It's a wonderful outlet for my hacking, I got to tell you.
There we go.
It's great stuff.
Are we done with the computer yet? Because I thought of something fun that most people who are like internet only doing email and chat and everything expect everything to be instantaneous in real time, and that's not how it used to be. Back in the good old days, especially when you're using FidoNet, stuff like that, pretty much everything was store and forward, which could make things fun. You send a message out someplace, it gets you put it on the local BBS you're connected to, that BBS maybe once or twice a day connects with another one upstream and passes information back and forth, and sometimes it could take days or even a week for messages and replies to propagate out from your machine and back. And I had a point that was going with that, but I forgot what it was because the coffee sucked this morning and I'm not quite awake yet.
Huh? Why was that a good thing?
I didn't say good, just kind of interesting. You could sometimes see little flame wars burst out and then replies would, you know, come back a couple hours or days later. What was it? Yeah, really.
Yeah. I have this set up in my own system at home. It's one of these things where you set it up and kind of forget exactly how you did it. Wonderful thing called batch files, but you do it so you don't have to remember all the commands. So it'll take just a second here.
Any other audience questions, or shall we stall some more?
I can stall a little bit.
I'm
just saying, any of you have kids or whatever, they might actually, if they're interested in computers at all, they might actually find BBS is very interesting, because I do, and I'm not your average teenager, but I know of people, of my friends that I showed this to, and they're like, hey, this is pretty cool, and they got really interested in it really fast, and they just, the only reason they had never been involved in it before is because they didn't know what a BBS was.
Yeah, modems are kind of cool. I like playing around with the AT command set. There's all sorts of bizarre, weird things you can do there. Just see how freaky you can program your modem and still have it work. I think we had a question. Cool.
Yeah, I was just wondering what you think, like,
obviously BBS's time is sort of past. What do you think has like replaced it the closest to what it was?
The World Wide Web.
Slashdot kind of has that feel, if anyone's familiar with that site. Slashdot spelled out as
I know what Slashdot is, but like, I don't know if that would be...
Yeah. Yeah, some of the Usenet stuff. But yeah,
it seems like Usenet is like sort of dying, too.
Well, people have been predicting the death of Usenet for a couple of decades now.
Yeah.
So Usenet's going to be around for a while, or at least that form of sending stuff out. Anyone who's on high-volume mailing lists, like some of the security-related stuff or Linux lists or whatever, you know, you can get hundreds of email messages a day. Mm-hmm. It's a lot easier to thread that stuff and read it and delete the crap you don't want to see if you're pulling it in as an NNTP feed instead of an SMTP feed. In fact, on the SC2600.org site, we've got a mailed news gateway, and I pretty much read all of the mail that goes across the list as news just because it's easier to read that way. And should we ever actually get, you know, colonies out there in space, the Moon and Mars and stuff like that, just due to light speed lag, variants of the NNT protocol are going to be store and forward are going to be what we're using to send messages back and forth. And if I remember correctly, a lot of the IPv6 stuff, they've already put specs in there for multi-nets and, you know, internets on Earth and the Moon and whatever, you know, kind of a fun time-wasting thing to code in, but who knows, it might be really useful in a century or two. And I think it's kind of cool that these guys can get grants to actually be writing network protocols that will work across interplanetary distances.
Hopefully we'll have to think about such things.
Yeah, yes. Seriously.
Yeah, but I actually have it up and running now. Cool. Took me a few minute here to do it. This just is a generic login screen of the BBS. Just for anybody who, well, I think everybody was, BBS is still alive, you could see. Just have to set up your own stuff, whatever you want to do. You can set up messaging boards. Right now, I just kept the generic, just one of everything. Let's write a message here.
While he's doing that, I wanted to address your question a little bit more about the, you know, what gives the closest feel to BBS nowadays. From my experience, the closest thing I get to the old BBS days are local mailing lists that I'm on, local Usenet groups like Nashville.general to an extent, and some websites. One of the things that's really easy online on the internet to totally trash your BBS feeling is the scale of it is so huge. You don't have the intimate contact with a lot of the people on the BBSs. I mean, when back in the BBS days, you had... Say again?
It's just... Also, it's not local. Like,
yeah,
for
yeah.
instance, you mentioned Slashdot. Like, you have people across the country.
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah, elements of Slashdot, but it's not a replacement for the BBS scene. Yeah, there's a lot of times not a sense of community to that, and with the local BBS scene... you know, you knew a lot of the people who were on there, met them in the real world, too. Some people I've dealt with on the net for years, you know, I wouldn't know what this person looked like. I'll probably never meet them face-to-face. And anyway, are you done? Are you ready?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
There's some packets going by.
Quick question. How many people live in the Atlanta area? Anybody? A good statistic I have is... When I first got online, there were about 200 BBSs around in the Atlanta area on the online Atlanta Society BBS list, the Oasis BBS listing. Then I think it peaked around 95 when there were over 300 BBSs. And the latest file I have, which was actually last year's file, I now update it like once every 6 months instead of once a month, it was down to, I think, 68 verified and 40 had dropped. In the past 6 months, then.
Support your local BBS.
Yeah, support your local BBS. There's been a good number that I've been sad to see go away. My last connection to FidoNet was about 4 years ago when a BBS called the Cellside BBS had a very large feed. Was participated in several of the FidoNet conferences about the Land of Devastation board door and lots of other door games. And that was my last connection to FidoNet. Oh, yes.
Yeah, handouts don't do you any good unless you actually hand them out.
Yeah, sorry about that. It's not really a whole lot. Just discusses a few of the basic things, like what a message form is. Most people have no idea. They think, oh, look, you either write email or you see somebody on AOL Instant Messenger. They don't think, wow, you actually have to write comments and figure out, should I really post this? Will somebody get really pissed off at me on the BBS listing here and not like me everywhere else? If I can, let me pull up a Oasis BBS listing really quickly and see if I can't find it so we can see what the latest statistic of BBS's is. No, that's not what I want.
Collect them all, trade them with your friends. Handouts are good.
Actually, one site I should give you guys, www.thebbs.org, wonderful site. It has what used to be the SysOps Corner, which is now a different person is running it. Any door game you want, basically. Well, almost all of them. I'm still looking for one called Dominions I played about 6 years ago on a WWIV BBS. Haven't seen it since. It kind of died after his computer crashed, and haven't seen any mention of it on the entire internet in these past 5 years of searching for it. But it has most door games that are popular, the hundreds upon thousands of add-ins for Lord, which everybody decided, hey, this might be cool, and they took somebody else's idea and changed it and made it their own. You can see these are the different BBS softwares you can find. You can find somebody else's software that you want here. Add a link somewhere.
Maybe we should give some people some information about if they want to run
BBS. I've been talking about BBSs and what they are. Let's talk about what people did with BBSs.
Yeah, and lots of fun stuff.
This is the BBS is pretty much the birth of the wares scene and porn.
Yeah,
but more wares than porn, I think, for at least for a while. Yeah. People seem to be more interested in the pirated software than the
you
prime.
Also gotten more legal
didn't have
troubles.
MP3s back then, unfortunately.
Yeah. You had a wonderful thing called mods.
We had mods and MIDIs.
Mods and MIDIs. I actually have a whole collection of nearly 5,000 mods in my computer. Actually, most of the 3,000 of which are on a CD I bought. The other 2,000 I've downloaded off of Usenet, alt.binaries.
Hey,
that sounds
do you have a floppy disk and any MIDI files? You know that piano up in the lounge up there?
Yeah, I do have floppy disk.
We took a look at that floppy disk up there, and those are just standard MIDI files. You got MIDIs of, like, Ozzy Osbourne or, some Nine Inch Nails MIDIs or something like that. Let's get some real music going up there.
We are not condoning this for anybody. Really, we aren't.
We're just experimenting.
We're just doing this to hand out to people.
If anyone decides before Dragon Con is over that they're going to swap that floppy disk in there and put their own in there, all we ask is that you return the original at some point. Don't steal it. That would be mean.
I don't care.
It's too bad Rattle's not here this year. I just remembered Rattle.
Anybody have? We have cameras. We do have a couple cameras. We can. Ship them off to Rattle and put them online so we can see us actually doing this.
You may not be up right now, anyway, Rattle was a guy who's been here for the last 2 years, hanging out on the hacking panels, and he's originally from Jersey, and he was real big in the BBS scene up there. In fact, when he was a teenager living with his parents, he had three pirated 800 lines running into his house that he wasn't paying for, and his folks had no idea what was going on. He was one of the hubs for the zero-day wares scene up in New Jersey, and I wish he had shown up. He'd be able to talk about the BBS scene at great length, although he can talk about anything at great length, and sometimes it's hard to get him to stop talking about things at great length.
You can throw a beer at him. Sometimes that works, yes.
Yeah, really. Sometimes. But, yeah, there was a lot of wackiness going on in the BBS days back then. Think about you had all these technically skilled people or sort of technically skilled people, and a lot of them were kids, and the rules didn't apply to them as far as some of them thought. And there was a lot of insane stuff that went on. That's where I got my first G-Files, talking about all the fun things you could do with the phone system to manipulate it and experiment with it in various ways. And, you know, try the software before you buy it, hint, hint, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. And a lot of that seems to have, the outlaw, the feeling for that has kind of died as the net has become more widespread and accepted and basically an appliance. You got a lot of windows open on that thing.
Oh, this is nothing.
What a concept. Try software before you buy it.
Yeah.
That's what I do. I mean, half the software on my computer isn't quite registered yet, but that's because only in the past year have I actually made enough money. I can actually buy the software now, which I'm going to. Hopefully.
Yeah, that was a that reminds me. That was a big reason for a lot of the piracy and stuff. When I was a kid, I didn't have any money, you know?
So, yeah, but now that
it's nice being able to pay for stuff nowadays. But
of course, some of these pieces of software that aren't supported anymore. It was supported, you know, like 4 or 5 years ago. The author moved away, died. So it's here. It's public domain now. You know, so something that happens.
That's right. 300 baud MP3 BBS.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. What a concept.
All your MP3s encoded at 256 bits. That is, but that's a good idea. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll take a good.
You can put a list up there for your login screen for your BBS, you know, latest 0-day MP3s, you know, pre-release, whatever. Who were some of the bands? Madonna and The Cure and a couple others have been ticked lately because some of their stuff got released as MP3 when it was still in demo form before the official releases. Yeah.
She was in the studio and somehow somebody leaked the pre-cuts out of the studio.
But she really wanted to make someone waste a lot of time just to be a jerk. You have a login screen here. Yeah, here we go. Latest 0-day MP3s. You know, fresh from the studio, haven't even been released yet. And have it your Chipmunks version remix of Britney Spears or something like that.
There's actually a reason why I am picking Metallica here. how many people here have heard about the Napster problems with Metallica and Napster?
How many people have been banned from Napster because of Metallica? All right. Have you figured out how to get back on yet? Okay, good.
Nobody's recording Napster traffic?
Oh. Oh, well.
Some guy released a Sue Napster kit. And it's just a little
into the
program.
Mic. Talk into the mic, dude.
It's just a little.
We have to
program
record this for posterity, so you know people can listen to it.
You
months
type
in, your
in a word, a string of letters, and if anybody on Napster downloads a file with that string of letters, it records their IP and various information. It's very interesting. I recorded in the past week over 3 million. People have downloaded songs with the word KORN in it.
Yeah. Corn.
What I'm going to do with it, I have no idea, but it's there.
Blackmail.
Yes.
Put yourself through college.
Okay, well, we have some MIDI files we can experiment with, do hardware testing on personal equipment, yes, later on. Yeah.
What are you looking at me for? What were you talking about?
Okay, I'll get rid of that.
Ah, okay.
Get back to what we're actually supposed to be talking about, a BBS.
What? Huh?
Yeah, we kind of got off a little bit of stuff.
So tell us about BBSs. Check those notes real quick.
Let's see what else do we have.
So why'd you get interested in BBSs instead of the internet?
Because when I grew up, and when I first got online,
because you're so old.
Well, not quite. Old compared to computers at times, yes, but not really that old compared to somebody like Johnny X, who's been in it basically since I've been alive.
For him.
Yeah.
Not that old. No, seriously, when did you say you first did the BBSs?
Back in 93, 94.
Oh, yeah, pre-internet, but...
Yeah, well, actually, I saw it in the Atlanta Computer Currents, which is no longer the Atlanta Computer Currents. It's based out of San Francisco. Kind of defeats the purpose of Atlanta. But they had to move all the editors out, and about half of them left, and now mainly it's just junk stuff about 2-month-old ads from companies here at Atlanta that have to get send their stuff out to San Francisco and back. But they had a whole selection of about 30 BBSs every month in their publication about local BBSs, what they were, their numbers, and all. Got on a few. My first experience with the internet was a site called the Southeastern Information Depot. They had a wonderful thing where they would go to, they ran, what was it, major BBS, I think, or a version thereof,
yeah.
Where they allowed a Telnet FTP connections out to other places, and they also used links using Telnet to another system, and then from that Telnet connection you could run anything else. Of course, they had a slight backdoor in their software. When you were quitting out of a web, their links, if you press like just random characters really fast on a slow connection, it would drop you to their shell program. Really cool. And from there, I learned, oh, cool, this is what FTP is, what Telnet. That's how I got into Telnetting into other BBSs around the country. You could load up other sites. They even had a small Usenet newsgroup feed. And email feed, except a couple of those were password protected, so you couldn't run them. And I didn't know enough then to figure out how to crack the passwords, but that was my first experience getting on the internet, was text-based links and figuring out. And that's why I love AltaVista, is because that was there. Yeah, they would, you would dial into the BBS. And
yeah, actually, BBS is how I got my first internet experience, too.
BBS is considered internet?
That's how I got through to the internet originally.
BBS is like a dial-in, you know. You don't, you know, AOL is not the internet. You dial into AOL to get into the internet.
In 85, when I was living up in Nashville, Vanderbilt had a bunch of dial-in modems so professors could get in and access engineering computers and stuff like that. And they had this weird pseudo-BBS running. You dial in, and then you would connect to whatever computer you wanted to connect to internally. And what they also had that they didn't document, but a little bit of experimentation, some people discovered this and started making the rounds on the local BBSs, is that not only could you connect to the internal computers at Vanderbilt, you know, Unix and VAC stuff, password and login required, but basically they had the initial dial-in system, which they called Caravan, set up working as a BBS, and you could use doors on it basically to Telnet out anywhere you wanted, to FTP out, to get on IRC, no login or password required, and they even had a dial-out modem pool as well, which meant because of where Vanderbilt was located relative to where I was located, I could dial out through their modem pool and make local phone calls that would be long distance from my house to other BBSs in different counties. So it was a great learning tool.
Yeah,
for instance, I had I had a faculty account at Middle Tennessee State University that was long distance from where I was living at the time, but if I dialed in through Vanderbilt and then dialed out again, it became local again, and that's how I actually got some of my first internet and Unix experience, going through Vanderbilt's little undocumented, oops, we forgot to turn that off, Caravan BBS, as there were message boards on there, and going out through their modem pool to other universities and other systems. Interesting little aside. I actually got legitimate internet access a year later.
Yeah, that sort of sounds like me. I kind of got legitimate access. One really interesting thing with our system was on the Southeastern Information Depot, I continued my internet access about 6 months after they turned to an all-pay system. They kind of forgot to clear out. I just kept on logging in with new names and stuff and had 30 minutes a thing. I actually had a total of an hour and a half a day I could use online on the internet. I had 3 different accounts in this system. They didn't catch on that people were doing this till about 6 months later, and they kicked everybody off permanently. I think it finally went down, that BBS went down in early 98, actually.
Telenet was a packet-switched network, and they had a service for a while where you could pay about $25 or $30 a month, dial into your local Telenet tip, and then give it the data ID address of what city you wanted to go to. You were then connected to a Hayes modem in that city. One of my first articles for 2600 magazine was an article on the Hayes command set, how to change the Hayes command characters from +++ to something else like vertical bar, vertical bar, vertical bar. This would let you tell your Hayes modem that you don't want to talk to it, So you change yours to the vertical bar, vertical bar, vertical bar. You're then connected to a Hayes modem in Distant City. When you then hit plus, 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 you're not waking up your modem. You're waking up the other guy's modem, the one in the Distant City. So now you could dial up, finally get a modem in a remote city because they didn't have that many of them. You could then log have a dial out to a bulletin board in that Distant City. You then had to get it to hang up because just telling it bye, telling the BBS goodbye, once it lost the line, tell them that would drop you back to your city. So you had to hit by, hit plus, plus, plus real quick, and go ATH to hang up the modem, then ATDT to dial up the next one you want to dial up out there, whatever city that was, because you finally had the modem out there. You didn't have to let it go. And it was all, you know, perfectly valid computer stuff, Hayes modem stuff. You know, with me, the secrets are in the manual, but whoever reads the manual?
Yeah. RTFM. Rex Wonders.
Read the friendly manual. I found that in a children's glossary of computers.
Actually, Telenet is still alive. Where I work, we use Telenet to dial financial services around different places when it works. Since we don't support it, we're not supposed to support it, but we have to support it anyway because we don't have support with the company that sold us the software. Wonderful stuff, since none of us in the computer department where I work actually know what the software really is or does. We just use it. Wonderful things about that. Not to mention, it's been around longer than any... Well, only one person that remembers it going in, but he's not that much useful because he doesn't do anything with computers. He just does the mainframe we have, and that's... and the financial software, and that's it.
Yeah. Okay, what is typing on the screen there?
Would you Global like to play a game?
I know, I'm a terrible
spell. Damn those spell checkers, they've ruined us all.
Yeah. How many people here use spell checkers in their email?
Well, no, not really.
Okay.
I do. I don't want to look like a moron.
Okay, well.
I mean, I know I'm a moron, but I don't want other people to know that.
Yeah? Okay, I was just curious because
I consider it a method of authentication that it's for me. So I always misspell the same words the same way.
Yeah.
So if somebody else sends a message with my name on it and those words are properly spelled, people know it's not me.
That can also be a good thing with it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I've never used spell check. I mean, when I first started writing email, there was never such a thing as spell check. Most advanced thing was if you were writing a document in WordPerfect 5.0 or 6.0, and half the time it would catch your words, or sometimes it would catch the right words that thought was spelled wrong. You would have to do add, you know, really
You have
sucks.
To dig out that that analog spell checker, you know, the dead tree one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Actually, I was thinking about trying to bring that for our other panel, the language in cyberspace. Looked in a interesting dictionary a couple of weeks ago that was made in the late 70s or early 80s that doesn't even have the word computer in it, but it has the word COBOL. Don't ask me how that combines, but it doesn't have computer, but it has the word COBOL, and it says it's a computer language. Yet, I'm going to try and see if I can't bring a new one. Well, we have new dictionaries for people. The Jargon file, this is one-fifth of the Jargon file. It's 173 pages of it out of 593. Nimrod's dad
Would it
was
been
not,
cheaper to buy the book?
Well, I haven't been... I haven't
not
been
because my dad's yet. Company is paying for it.
Yeah. HP is wonderful for doing that, sort of.
Any more questions?
Well.
You gotta have some questions, right?
Anybody want to talk about their experiences or like where they were set up, or what, how long, and from when to when they were set up?
Storytelling.
I got a question. It's not BBS related. What the hell is that thing on your shoulder?
It's a pet.
What is that?
It's Snowfire. It's she's a wonderful dragon. Our.
Okay, dude, I haven't seen one of those before. I was freaking
okay,
me out when I first noticed it.
It's called a wood baby. And it's a telepathic cat type dragon, and she moves her head and everything. And she just sits on your shoulder, and does all kinds of stuff. See? So we're just playing. She's telepathic.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And animatronic.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes. No, we don't. We would rather play a nice game of chess. We don't want someone to play a war on that thing. So be careful what button you push.
Now, your time left there, is that the number of minutes you have left to
yeah.
log in? Okay.
Yeah, I logged in as sysop, so it's 1,400 minutes left.
Okay.
That'd be funny if your own BBS kicked you off during the panel.
Yeah.
No response from user in X number of minutes. Disconnected.
Which was typical, because if you weren't going to be playing on the BBS, it wanted to free up the modem line for somebody else.
Because a lot of BBSs, you know, had two lines, if you were lucky.
Mm.
Sometimes just one from, like, late at night or during the day or something.
And you had Elite Dudes BBS that ran from, you know, 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. and sometimes 24 hours a day on the weekends on Mommy and Daddy's phone line, one and only phone line.
Yeah.
And
and people who call it would get shh in their ear all the time. It's like, ow. I've actually done that.
Are you on that damn computer again?
Yeah. I don't know. My parents do that all the time. Whenever my dad comes home from work, a lot of times he'll pick up the phone and all he hears are shh, and all of a sudden all I see is click. Do you want to reconnect? Really hate it, because when you're on Usenet, you can't resume downloads and stuff. Really sucks. That's one thing bad about Usenet.
Ah, yes, living with the parental units and the wars
yeah.
over the phone lines. That was fun.
Hopefully soon we'll be getting DSL into my house, if I can pay for it, yes.
You'll yeah. never see sunlight again.
No, actually, what
that's
I want to do...
That's not a bad thing. Yeah.
That's a
bad thing.
Yeah.
I know, that big blue room out there can be scary sometimes. I think we got a question over here. Mike boy...
You actually have to exercise again.
Yeah, it's really not a question. One of the things we did do, though, was instead of getting a second line into the house, which was, you know, became prohibitive, getting two or three lines, cell phones are wonderful, and call forward.
Cost $2.75 a month from Bell South. You just call yeah. forward to your cell phone,
and
you can go anywhere, even if you're like, huh?
$4
a month, sorry.
Yes.
I wonder if
we're
they give
paying.
Us any money for that.
But we found out that was the best way to go for us. That way, he ties up the computer, we can still connect with the world.
Yeah, either that or if like, we had an emergency with one of my grandparents, we just call forward the phone. We could be somewhere else, anywhere in the country, and we'd still get the phone as if it was normal, like if we were expecting other calls.
Or if you're rattled, you just pirate 3 free 1-800 lines, and there you go.
Yeah, yeah. You can do that.
You sure your kids, yeah, I've got
well,
just
can
the
be
one
like
extra
Cheshire
phone line hooked up there, you may want to
double
check.
You can create your own whole area code like
yeah.
Cheshire.
Yeah, well, actually, that went by the rules.
Yeah, that went by the rules, by but... The rules.
That's still one hell of a hack, though.
Thank you. If anyone ever heard about it, it was actually on Fox 97, the radio station. Cheshire created his own area code.
Well, it was a very simple process, actually. area code 407 is going to be split. They're going to have a Public Service Commission hearing on it. I had to work that night, so I didn't go.
Graphics.
Well, that's all right. Nobody else went either. So it made big headlines the next day. Public Service Commission hearing to split area code. Well, now people find out about it because it was in the paper. Big uproar. So the Public Service Commission holds a second round of hearings. I look. I still got to work that night as well. But this time I go up on the internet and do some checking. Well, I'm a bit of a phone freak in distant past.
Just a bit.
I know to go and look at the website of the North American Numbering Plan Administration. NANPA.com, and I'm looking through and I find the list of area codes. 201 New Jersey, 202 DC, blah, 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 321 available for geographic relief. Okay. I'm a space cadet also. That's why I moved to Florida. That's why I moved to Titusville, Florida, just outside the main gates of the Kennedy Space Center so I can watch them go up. 321, I felt, should represent the countdown capital of the world. It was time to log off the internet, power up the word processing software, and prepare my testimony for the Public Service Commission hearing. I'm calling in to work that night. I presented my testimony to the Public Service Commission. I had 5 copies with me because I presented testimony in New York State at one time when I was still living up there, and they were splitting 212 into 212 and 718. At the first hearings, I was one of the few people in favor of the split. Absolutely running out of exchanges, split the area code, but in return, take off that $1 a month fee for Touchtone. And you know, that's where the movement, well, no, the movement had started long before that. Back in 1964, when I went to the New York World's Fair, you still remember the AT&T Pavilion, where they had a rotary dial and a touch-tone dial, and you dialed your phone number in the rotary dial and how many seconds it took, and the touch-tone pad, and how many seconds that took, and how much faster it was. And therefore, you did not need as many incoming registers to collect the digits and complete the call, since you could process more calls because it was so much faster. Well, that was 1964. This is 1985 or whatever it was at the time for the 718 split. And by now, we should be able to do away with that extra fee because they don't need as much equipment. The equipment's cheaper now, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I learned at that time that you bring a copy for each commissioner, and you especially bring a copy for the poor schmuck that's got to sit there with the machine and take it all down. They are so grateful when you hand them a copy of your prepared text because they've got something to work from and can put in your ad-libs as they go along. So I go present my testimony at the Public Service Commission hearing that the countdown capital of the world should have area code 321. And by the way, here's information from the internet showing that that number is available. They loved the idea from the get-go. One of the commissioners told me that they love having some kind of sugar coating to put on this kind of problem. And this was exactly what they were looking for. Then, after the meeting, the chairman of the commission came up to me and said, you know, we'd gone to NANPA. We asked them for a copy of such a list as you've presented here. And they said it was proprietary information. Thank you very much for bringing this to our attention. Because, of course, bringing the printout, what's at the top of each page? The URL. Now they know where to go to find available for geographic relief.
Your tax dollars at work, folks.
You bet.
Yes.
Took a phone freak to wake them up.
You want to tell them the number you snagged in that area code?
Well, if you insist. When I send out an email, I have signature tag SIG.321, and it says, it's my area code. I asked for it, they approved it, so it's mine, right? But I share. However, I have saved the best number for myself. Now, the 543 exchange is a Bell South Mobility exchange. There's a particular number I wanted. I dialed it up. I'm sorry, the number you have dialed is not currently in use. Ooh, cool. Went down to the kiosk in the mall. I want 5438633, please. Yes, well, okay. I'm sorry, sir, but that number is in the middle of a 100 group that is in a corporate rate. And so that number is not really available, even though the number may not be in use. We can't allow you to have that number. I'm so terribly sorry. That was fine. By the way, that was the day after my testimony before the Public Service Commission. The day after the PSC approved the 321 area code, which was months later, got up on the internet. BellSouthMobility.com. Mm-hmm. Okay, about the company. Okay, Mark Fiedler is the president of the company. Okay, that's interesting. And contact the company. Okay, and here's the email address with the publicity flag. First name underscore last name at, Okay, Mark underscore Fiedler at, Dear Mr. Fiedler, I am the fellow, blah, 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 blah. May I please have the number 543-8633 so that as of November 1st, when this part of Florida becomes area code 321, I will have the number 321 liftoff. Saved the best number for myself. Hit Control X on the Pine software to send a message. Looked at my watch. It's 6:30 p.m. on a Friday. Monday, he'll maybe get it. Tuesday is the earliest I could possibly think about. Sunday evening, you have new mail. I guess he checks it from home. What can I say? Yeah, sounds cool. Nice idea. I'll get my people on it. 2-3 weeks later, just because we were slow getting together, I have the number. It's now on my cell phone at home.
Please wait.
Well, decades later, yes. The question was, did I ever get the touchdown fee removed? Actually, Florida moved faster on that than New York did, and that was without my intervention.
Yeah, Nashville still charges for touch tones, and anyone up in that part of the world, if you're really bored one night, you can call customer service a couple of different times to get different people each time and ask them why they still charge for touch tones when it's built into the switch, and they actually have to go in and pull cards, and it costs them more to set up the faked rotary dial than it does to give you touch tone service, why they still charge you for the touch tone stuff. You'll get a bunch of interesting answers.
I think here in
Georgia, every one of them different every time you call.
Here in Georgia, I think you have to pay for the pulse dialing because my grandparents, I think, have to pay a little, like a whatever it is, extra over the normal phone bill. But they've used rotary since rotary phones came to Georgia for the first time back.
Back when Stroger brought them to town, probably.
Yeah, back when the first person brought the first rotary phone to Marietta City, they started using that rotary phone. So. Some of the phones are older than my dad is, so some of the phones are like back, huh? Yeah, some of the phones we have are really, really old. Some of them are like 70 years old almost. So,
wait for Mike Boy over there.
Yes, please use phone or he. Please use the little mic over there that he has. Otherwise, he will come over and beat you over the head with it. Maybe.
If we're in a bad mood.
Anything else anybody wants to talk about?
Final questions?
We've got about like 5 minutes, so final questions.
Impressions, anything like that?
Anybody use any really unique hardware?
The Model 100.
Anybody use anything besides DOS or Windows?
Woo-hoo.
Okay, well, for BBS related, anything.
There is Linux BBS software.
Yeah, there is Linux, there's Unix, there's Mac, Trash 80, Commodore, any Amiga, anything you want, just look on the net, you can download it.
You know, I did used to laugh at Commodore 64s until I saw what people were doing with them because they couldn't afford anything else, so they made that thing turn tricks that just were amazing. And to this day, I don't even laugh at AOL people because at least they're getting online. At least I can send them email.
We have people like Nimrod here who still lives at home. His parents control everything, and he doesn't really have a job yet, so he has to use what his parents use.
Commodore 64, with available resources,
which is AOL.
Yeah,
Commodore 64 has got to be the most thoroughly hacked out, reverse engineered piece of computer equipment in existence.
I would dare say.
In fact, there are a couple places over in Europe where the copyright laws are a little bit different, where you can get all sorts of information on reverse engineering everything from the boards to the individual chips, and I'm surprised no one's put out a kit so you can go down to Radio Shack and build your own Commodore 64 out of parts.
You probably could, you know.
Probably could.
If you can find the 6502s.
Yeah. eBay.
There you go.
eBay, I mean, look, I've been on there with some of them.
Dayton
see electronic
Hamfest,
supplies.
Yeah.
You know, here's a big
surplus.
Box, 20-pound box of circuit boards and chips and resistors, capacitors, anything you want. And you can buy these things for like 10 or 15 bucks sometime if you get the right deals.
Selling parts by the pound.
Yeah, you're not sure that they actually all work, but, I mean, you have enough parts that you could actually find one out of like 100 that might work there. So...
We done? I'm hungry.
Thanks for coming.